Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of this program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved. Its host and its founder is Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. We're also going to be joined on today's program by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who'll be talking with Rick Harrison from the Pawn Stars show. It's going to be a very interesting conversation, but let's jump in right now as Carol Marx interviews Dr. Michael Roizen. He's the chief wellness officer at Cleveland Clinic and co-author of the New York Times bestselling You, Owner's Manual series of books. He has a new book out titled, This Is Your Do-Over, The 7 Secrets to Losing Weight, Living Longer, and Getting a Second Chance at the Life You Want, published by Scribner.
You've become known around the world for the idea for treating patients with the real age concept. What and how did you come up with the real age concept, and what is your biological age and your real age?
So I'll answer the last question first. That is my calendar age or biologic age, if you will. I was born in January of 1946, so I'm 69 years old. My real age, which is the actual age of my body, calculated by all the things I do and what we do to keep healthy, is 48.7.
Wow.
So I'm about a little over 20 years younger than the calendar would say I am, and that's because I do so many of the things that you and your guests recommend, if you will.
And I want to say that in your new book, you discuss 7 simple ways using diet, exercise, sleep, stress management, and sex that can make our coming years the best they can be and reduce our real body age, as you've been able to do when compared to our biological age. And the first thing that you talk about is exercise. And why is it so important? And you talk about walking 10,000 steps. Now, that's 5 miles a day. That's a lot.
Let me give you the story. In fact, the most important step, what we did is we took the people who had taken the real age test repeatedly, it's about 30 million people, and looked at what characteristics they had for those who sustained a do-over. And the first one was they had a buddy, and that buddy often encouraged them in the physical activity they did. But the most important and the secret sauce was really to have that buddy. We can go into that later. The 10,000 steps comes from the science of breaking down insulin resistance. So one of my most favorite patient stories is a family of 3 that I coached through the Dr. Oz show. Mother, grandmother, and a daughter all had type 2 diabetes, all had hypertension, all had obesity. And the grandmom was in a wheelchair because of arthritis. And so I said, how am I going to get her to walk 10,000 steps a day? We gave her 2 pedometers, so she'd never, even if she lost one, she'd never be without one. And I said, just you walk to the bathroom. And she said she did. So she, I said, just tell me the number of steps you walk each day. And she said, she counted it after the first 3 days, she averaged 64 steps a day. So I said, okay, what I want you to do is promise me that you'll never walk fewer steps today than you walked yesterday. That is, add either take the same number of steps or add a few. So she took this as her challenge, and so she, the first day she walked 68, 4 more steps, the second day 72. And she's just kept adding to that. After 2 years, she was walking 10,000 steps a day and got out of her wheelchair and using a walker. And then after 5 years, which was last year sometime, she got rid of the walker and literally got rid of all of her diabetic medicines, 3 of them, got rid of 2 of her 3 antihypertensive medicines, got rid of her arthritis medicine, and lost a lot of weight. So that's a story of if she can do it, virtually anyone can do it.
Anybody can do it, and it's so, so inspirational. And you also talk about, in your book, your do-overs, you know, about what we put in our mouth, and you say, arrest, ban, and imprison the 5 food felons. So what are these felons? And that can't be too easy to do.
Well, it is much like walking, is as you gradually do it, but it is also to break down what we call insulin resistance. So one of the problems with the five food felons is they are trans fat and saturated fat, which change the receptor on your insulin receptor to make it harder for sugar to get in your cells, and it hangs around in the bloodstream, changes your proteins, make it much more likely for you to develop metabolic syndrome and diabetes, type 2 diabetes. The second, it is added sugar, added syrups, and 100% whole grain are three of the felons, and the other two are ones that change the way your proteins and gene function to do the same thing to your body, and that's saturated fat and trans fat. So those are the five food felons. And in fact, what you can do, and this is really almost a challenge for you and some of your audience, you could even say, we're going to have parties where we cook without the five food felons. Today, let's just make every dish green, or make every, you've got a red dish, you've got a green dish, etc. But no matter what color or spice you use, you can't have one of the five food felons in it. And so although it might seem a little difficult at first, it's really easy. And if you have, instead of having a book club, you have a recipe club, or a club where you bring food over and taste it, you'll find a few things each time you love, and that's essentially, and you'll be able to figure out how to spice things a little differently, and it'll end up being a real joy. So pretty easy to do that.
You know, a lot of us are addicted, you know, to fast foods and bad foods, and you say that we really need to develop, get rid of a bad habit and develop a new one, and that's not easy. You recommend a buddy system. Is that a good idea?
Oh, yeah, the buddy system is really the key. And, you know, your brain wants to be active. So if you have a habit that is, for example, you have a habit of going after chocolate chip cookies at, say, 8 p.m. at night, and you're almost addicted to them. Well, what you have to do is your body wants to do something at 8 p.m. at night. So you've got to, it's developed. Your brain has developed a pathway to maybe that listening to a certain TV or radio show triggers you to do that, to grab a couple cookies or whatever, and then you keep going after them. So the key is to develop another habit. So at 8 p.m. at night, maybe you go on a treadmill, or at 8 p.m. at night, maybe you, go to a different room to watch that program that it's much harder to get food. Or you do something because your body wants to have another habit. Or maybe you just pull out a glass or two glasses of water or whatever it is, coffee for me, and figure out another way. And then if you do indulge again, you find your favorite box of chocolate chip cookies and eat the whole box, you tell your buddy that. And you and your buddy work together to figure out what the trigger was, and what the alternatives you could do are that will break that trigger and start a new habit that is a healthy habit. You want a high. The high is good, but you want it to be a healthy high.
You know, that makes a lot of common sense. And you said something that really reverberated with me because I hadn't thought about it. You said, you know, we tend to think that a lot of our stuff has to do bad habits, or our illnesses that we get have to do with our genes, but you said that that our health is not a gene thing after 35. It's up to you. I hadn't really heard about that.
Right. If you're affected by a gene change, it's going to affect you before the age of 35 and takes you where it wants to go, usually before 25. But once you're 35, whether you're at the top of your curve or not, depend on your turning on or off your genes. And what we know, there are 26,000 or so genes, but most of the rest of the DNA would mean over 280,000 genes if it was genes, but it isn't. It's mainly switches that turn on and off your genes. And what we've learned is that managing stress, not eating the five food felons, doing physical activity, that type of thing has profound effects at turning off or on, if you will, turning the rheostat on your protein factories. All your genes are as protein factories, turning it so that you make more of a protein or less of a protein. And that's really the key to, in fact, controlling your genes.
Now, when it comes to carrying out the seven steps in your book that can help listeners and your readers achieve a healthier lifestyle, isn't it important to emphasize that our health is going to get better incrementally and it's going to require both patience and commitment? Because I know sometimes I'm very impatient. I want everything to happen, you know, now, good things now, not wait.
You're exactly right. It takes a time for that to happen. It takes a while for it to happen. It doesn't happen right away. But it is, you start to feel better progressively. And so what people do, for example, people who are trying to get rid of weight, when they start to get rid of a little weight, their blood pressure starts to come down, their diet, their blood sugar starts to come down, they start to have less of the insulin resistance. And so you start to get changes right away, but it is a gradual thing, like the grandma who it took 5 years for her to get to 10,000 steps and get rid of her diabetes and her arthritis and her blood pressure and most of her blood pressure medicine. It was gradual and it takes time. And so you're absolutely right. It takes time and it's small and incremental.
That's Dr. Michael Roizen in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled, This Is Your Do-Over, The Seven Secrets to Losing Weight, Living Longer, and Getting a Second Chance at the Life You Want, published by Scribner. For more information, go to sharecare.com. Carol Marks returns with more interesting conversation when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. It is important to address a personal emergency response system in your home in case of falls or injuries. AARP encourages their use for many older Americans to enhance independence and security, especially for those living alone. Many brands of PERS are available on the market, and seniors should consider their specific needs and budget before deciding on a system. The Federal Trade Commission provides free online information. One can get a system as basic as wearing a necklace or bracelet and push a button that will transmit to an installed response center through your landline telephone. In the event of an emergency with falls, chest pain, a suspected intruder, a press of the button will have a 911 ambulance dispatched to your home, even if you cannot reach your phone. PERS systems can be rented or purchased through local hospitals and are affordable and serviced by representatives. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Alexandra Robbins. She's the winner of the 2014 John Bartlow Martin Award for Public Interest Magazine Journalism, and she's the author of 4 New York Times bestsellers. She's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled The Nurses, A Year of Secrets, Drama, and Miracles with the Heroes of the Hospital, published by Workman Publishing.
Now, wasn't one of the reasons that motivated you to write the book about nurses that really contemporary literature neglects them and doesn't acknowledge the heroic work they do and all the problems they have?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, nurses asked me to write it, actually. They wanted their views and their secrets, and there are a lot of secrets in the hospital, represented in a book that's fun to curl up with and sort of get lost in. So what I did is I followed 4 fascinating nurses for a year so that readers can really get into their stories, and I interviewed hundreds of others, and I even included some undercover reporting to find out what's really going on behind that hospital curtain.
Now, I wanted to ask you, the hospitals that you covered were all in a radius of 50 miles from a major city, but they were all very different. Some had good equipment, some didn't. Some were in poor sections of town. Did you find that affected the way they were really able to treat incoming patients in the emergency room?
Well, I found that there were some differences, but mostly the doctors and nurses in every emergency room are capable and prepared, and they really try to do what's best for the patient. So in terms of the actual differences between ERs, no, there's not that much. What's more interesting and more affects us is how nurses are treated, how the hospitals treat the nurses, because there is only one state in the entire country that has safe nurse-patient ratios. In every state but California, nurses can be overloaded with patients. And what that means for us is that death rates go up, infection rates go up, serious complications go up, simply because hospitals aren't willing to hire enough nurses to cover the influx of patients.
And the nurses are under tremendous pressure because they have to work 12-hour shifts. And one nurse who wrote about Molly was a designated trauma nurse in one of the hospitals that she was at. She never got a break in the ER. She couldn't even leave the floor to get lunch, which is an OSHA violation. You know, that concerned me.
Yeah, in fact, there are many hospitals around the country that don't give nurses breaks. So you have nurses working 12 to 14 hours straight, and they don't have time to eat or take a walk or sometimes even go to the bathroom just because they are worked so hard. These really, nurses are the unsung heroes of the hospital, and it is so important to get that message out.
And I couldn't agree with you more. There are angels. Now, I never realized that there are several types of traumas nurses can experience, and one is the physical trauma of getting hurt by patients, but that often is not reported. So why is that? That doesn't seem very fair.
Yeah, that's right. Nursing is the third most dangerous profession in this country because so many nurses are beaten up by patients, scratched, kicked, bitten, hit. And many hospitals tell them, you know what, just accept it. It's just part of the job, which is ridiculous. You can't go into Macy's, not like the way that your blouse fits, and then punch the cashier because of it. But in a hospital, patients are punching their nurses, and nurses are expected to continue to deliver the same compassionate care.
And I also read in your book, and, you know, I never would have known about it unless you had written this book, that oftentimes young nurses who are on the job are harassed and find themselves bullied.
That's right. In the hospitals that don't treat nurses right, nurses sometimes turn on each other because they have no other way to vent their frustrations. I was also really surprised that doctors bullying nurses is a pretty common problem. There are wonderful, wonderful doctors out there, of course, but there are physicians out there that throw scalpels and other instruments at their nurses and intimidate them, and that kind of relationship really affects patient care because then nurses are afraid to ask questions or the doctors won't listen to them when nurses say to them, hey, I think you need to come take a look at this patient urgently.
And I guess I've learned from bitter experience that reporting a doctor's inappropriate behavior, that the doctors aren't punished. There's a double standard, but the nurses may be left out to dry.
There are plenty of double standards in hospitals. And it's not just about inappropriate care or treating patients wrong. It's also when doctors and nurses have a relationship in the hospital and they're caught. There have been plenty of instances where the doctor, nothing happens to the doctor, but the nurse is fired. There are so many ways in which nurses are treated unequally, and that shouldn't be the case. Doctors shouldn't get all the glory. They'll breeze in for maybe 3 to 5 minutes at a time, but it's the nurse who's with you every minute of the day.
And the nurse who knows what's going on with the patient.
That's
now,
correct.
Your book is a real eye-opener when it comes to pain medication abuse. What percentage of nurses would you estimate working in hospitals are abusing drugs?
I would say between 6 to 10%, only slightly higher than the 6 to 8% of the general public. The problem is that the drugs are so much easier to access in the hospital, and hospitals are not making nurses aware that they could be susceptible to a problem and that there are ways that they can get over it. But, yes, you've heard of the TV show Nurse Jackie. One of the nurses I followed for a year, one of my main characters, it was a real-life Nurse Jackie trying to battle prescription drug abuse while caring for patients.
You know, that really is something, and there is a code of silence around this whole, you know, suspicious behavior that could be going on with a particular nurse. And I guess that they don't realize, and again, this is a matter of education, that they can get help without losing their license, because I think that's what they're afraid of.
That's exactly right. Nurses are so passionate about their jobs. They don't want to lose their jobs. And you know what? Nurses told me the reason they do this is because they say nursing isn't just a job, it's who I am. These are special, special people who are called to this profession, and it means the world to them.
You have many things in your book that really made me wake up, and shocking kind of secrets and about patients and their loved ones, and I certainly was surprised that sometimes the do-not-resuscitate orders are ignored.
Yes, that's an important secret that I was aware of and that I became aware of and that I talk about in the book and what to do about that. Yeah, your do not resuscitate order might be ignored in the hospitals, but there are things you can do, and I lay it out in the book, to make sure that your wishes for end-of-life care are catered to.
Now, are there any behind-the-scenes hospital secrets that you found really resonated with you, and can you tell us about one of them?
Just one, huh? There's so many. I was surprised by, and I think this is an important one for your listening audience to know, try to avoid teaching hospitals in July. Don't get sick in July, and if you do, try to go to a hospital that's not a teaching hospital, because at teaching hospitals in July, death rates spike between 8 and 34%. The reason is because this is when medical students graduate and become interns, interns move up to first-year residents, and so on. So you're a lot more likely to be treated by a doctor with relatively little experience. That's a really important one that's sort of easy to control.
And I was surprised to read in your book that you said that, you know, if you really didn't get along with a nurse, that you could ask to get another one. I would have never thought about that.
Yeah, you can ask. It depends on how the hospital is staffed. But also know that even if you're not getting along with your nurse, she may be dealing with other stresses. She may be having other issues with other patients. She may have just seen a horrible tragedy. You never really know what's going on. So at least know that they are trained, skilled, educated, and compassionate, and they're looking out for you.
And the other thing that bothered me was that, you know, when nurses do experience such a traumatic event, that they don't get any counseling from the hospital, which
they
badly
needed.
That bothered
me, too. That bothered me, too, Carol. In fact, one of the nurses I followed said to me, you know, we see several deaths, sometimes many deaths in one shift, and we're just expected to go back to work like nothing happened. I mean, that's horrible. Some hospitals don't even give them 5 minutes to catch their breath, to process what the horrible thing they have just seen, to digest the circumstances, or to take a breather. Nurses really deserve a lot more than that.
That's Alexandra Robbins in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled The Nurses, A Year of Secrets, Drama, and Miracles with the Heroes of the Hospital. It's published by Workman Publishing. For more information, visit alexandrarobbins.com. Coming up next, Richard Neer joins us when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues. Michael Harrison here with you on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. Very proud to be with you on this program. This program has been on the air in one form or another consistently now for over two decades. Kind of runs below the radar. It's heard on weekends on great talk radio stations around the country. And what I'm really proud about in terms of this program, in which I have the opportunity to serve as anchor, not as host. Carol Marks is the host, and I certainly am not the only voice on this show. We have a roundtable of outstanding personalities, experts, and broadcasters. What I love about this show is that in an industry marked by concern, focus, obsession with youth, and believe me, I'm about as young thinking as anybody you'll meet. Sometimes I'm even accused of being immature. And so I'm all for that, and I'm all for looking ahead. But I'm also for fairness, and I'm also for respect. And the media in America, driven by, obviously, Madison Avenue and commercial concerns, focuses primarily on young people. And if somebody's over 50 or 55 or 60, they quite often find that there's a lot lacking in terms of what's available in the mainstream media. So this program, which was conceived and developed by Carol Marks more than 20 years ago, originally was called Senior Focus, and it evolved into A Touch of Gray, and I became involved with it along the way, is something that really provides a service in as much as it unashamedly, unabashedly, unapologetically brings information to people via this wonderful medium of radio that is of use, of interest, of service, of comfort, of support to people over 50 years of age and their families, which is why I say at the beginning of the program, children of all ages, because so many people in their 50s find themselves in a situation that has been kind of accurately and colorfully termed the sandwich generation. meaning they have children, adult children, still living with them, and abiding by the rule that came down a long time ago, honor thy father and thy mother, they have their parents living with them. In many cases, these parents are in their 80s, 90s, and are living at home. And the amount of pressure that can be put on somebody dealing with adult children and senior parents all under one roof is extraordinary, and it's a phenomenon that in many ways I applaud. I'm all for families staying together. But also there are people who are in need of support and information. So in many ways, A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, is in fact a program for children of all ages. But I salute Carol Marx. I think that she has done and continues to do a remarkable job. And she does it under sometimes the worst of conditions because, like the rest of us, she's not getting any younger either. But she drives herself to research and get the information needed and select guests and topics. And not only that, she travels around the world and brings information from other countries on how their healthcare systems operate and how the services that they provide for senior citizens there are taken care of and done. And she brings that information back, not to mention she acts as a model, as a role model for people to get up and get out and live life and do things. And she's done everything from, she's explored, you know, if there were four corners on this planet, as the saying goes, she's been to all four of them. Check her out at the website, atouchofgray.com. Gray is spelled with an E. And I just wanted to mention that she is one fine lady, and we're grateful to be involved with her in this project.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just moments from now is going to speak with Rick Harrison, no relation to yours truly. He is, many of you know, is a star of the TV show Pawn Stars. And Richard is going to engage him in a conversation about how to reduce very high triglycerides, which I understand he has been afflicted with that syndrome. And I'm sure, Richard, you also talk a bit about his reality TV show Pawn Stars. Do you not?
Indeed, we do. The interesting thing is that the show itself is very health conscious. In that they have Chumley, the kind of doofus in the show, on a diet, eating lettuce and eating healthy foods, trying to lose weight. Corey, the son, or Big Hoss, as they used to call him, has lost over 100 pounds and is down into the low 200s from over 300 pounds. And Rick is constantly trying, and it's the struggle that we all face at our age, between the convenient food where you can just order out and get yourself some fried chicken and some comfort food, and the thought constantly that, you know, this stuff is not good for me, I need to eat more healthy, and that's the struggle that you constantly see on the program.
I haven't watched the show in a number of years, but I used to watch it all the time. I've gone through my reality show phase, and now I'm on to other things in terms of that part of my schedule where I veg out, you know, the mindless entertainment we all need to do here and there. I remember the old man, the father, Rick Harrison's dad, who started the business. I remember him not giving a damn about anything having to do with health. if I'm correct, he would yeah. sneak food and all that type of thing.
Well, I think he's around 70 or so, and he looks like he's about 90.
Oh,
and he is the guy that'll eat the donuts and will eat the junk food and really. He's this old crusty guy that doesn't really care much about his health. I can eat and drink and smoke and do what I want and live till 90. But the interesting thing about the show as it's evolved is that it's very educational. Now, I understand that a lot of it is set up where they don't know everything about everything that comes into the store.
You think?
But there's a great amount of history, and I asked Rick about that in the interview,
mm-hmm.
if he really does know this stuff. In a lot of cases, he does, but he says, I do bone up on it. I don't want to be caught like, duh, what's this?
Well, the show is one of those shows, I don't remember what channel it's on. Was it Arts and Entertainment or something?
History Channel.
The History Channel, of course. I mean, the History Channel used to be documentaries about World War II when it first came out, and now it's become all of these reality shows. They have to have some type of thinly veiled connection to education, or what's the point? And that's what this show does, as does that other show, American Pickers.
Yep.
But
I think they've figured out, Michael, is America's educational appetite also needs to be entertained. You know, when I went to school, the history was very dry and there were dates and things that you had to memorize. What they're trying to do is make it fun, make it entertaining, give you the human side of things to show you that George Washington wasn't this tight-lipped, wooden-toothed, never-tell-a-lie guy, but an actual human being who had emotions and feelings and flaws.
He did?
Oh, no.
Well, we look forward to hearing this interview with Rick Harrison. And then on the other side, let's you and I talk more. Richard Neer, our senior correspondent, stand by. He's in conversation with Rick Harrison about Pawn Stars and about Rick's battle with very high triglycerides. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it on the show. And that's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. Our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat, but adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com
859-428-1000
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite's the bomb.
We tell everybody we know about Dynavite.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
When I get down to the bottom of my box of Dynavite, it's time to place my order.
Dynavite.com
859-428-1000
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. You may recognize the symptoms of elderly depression, loss of appetite, weight loss, social withdrawal, problems with hygiene, neglecting personal well-being, or even a sadness that lasts over 2 weeks. Sound familiar? Here's what you can do about it. Exercise, eat well, and don't forget to socialize. Researchers at Duke University suggest exercising at least 3 times a week to keep the body and mind healthy. That means swimming, walking, and maybe light exercise classes with the approval of your medical doctor. Another key to happiness is maintaining self-esteem through clubs and groups. You might consider the gardening club or a musical choir. And lastly, treat your body well and it will thank you by feeling well. That means practicing good nutrition and eating well-balanced meals daily. Naturally, the needs of patients vary, but feel free to consult a geriatric specialist to make a personalized treatment plan. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Whoa, a digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Glad you like it. We can finally toss out that old massive stereo.
Mom, you can't just throw out electronics. They need to be recycled or donated.
Recycled? Like aluminum cans?
Yeah. You just go to greenergadgets.org, enter your zip code, and it tells you where the nearest certified recycling center is.
I knew that.
Okay, Mom.
Recycling electronics is as easy as buying them. Log on to greenergadgets.org to find electronics recycling options near you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again, as promised, is Richard Neer in conversation with reality show TV star Rick Harrison. He's the star of the television show Pawn Stars. But that's not just why he's here. He's going to talk to Richard about how to reduce very, very high triglycerides.
You took a pawn shop. It's now 9 years on television. You've expanded it to another show, a quiz show. You've got some of your friends, a Counting Cars show, Rick Dale's show. You've really created an empire here. How did this all come about?
For lack of a better term, I was always a media whore. Well, the whole thing was, every time I got a little national coverage, it was always really good for business. So I figured, you know what? I had to get me one of these reality shows. And I pitched it for years and years, and everyone told me no one wants to watch a show about a pawn shop with a bunch of fat guys in it. But after 4 years, I was able to convince the network to give me a shot. And we had amazing ratings right out the gate. And I truly believe that's because people were going through, like, their cable guide and thought it said something different than Pawn Stars.
I don't know about that. I think the second they turned it on, they'd realize it wasn't, and if it was, they probably said, not with these guys. So,
yeah.
However it worked out. Do you guys, I mean, it's amazing the stuff that you know. Do you kind of research some of this beforehand for the show? Because you just have this encyclopedic knowledge.
I generally don't know what I'm filming with until, like, literally, like, a half hour, an hour before I film with it. Sometimes I tell them, stop, I need to do a lot of fact-checking because, we'll stop right in the middle of a scene. I'll go, it's 1948 or 1949, check on that, we'll do a lot of that. But mostly it's me. Occasionally it's things like I have no idea what it is, and those things don't get on the air. That's generally me. Don't ask me anything about popular culture because this is a bad thing for a TV star to talk about. But I don't watch television really. I read every night, and it's all history books and science books and physics books and things like that.
Tell us the best deal you ever made in terms of turnaround profit and the worst deal you ever made.
Well, I'm married, so I'm going to say the best deal I ever made was my wife. but probably the best deal I ever made, this was like 25 years ago. This was before the Internet. A person came to the shop, and they had some old photographs. I didn't know a lot about them, but they were all of American Indians. And I literally had no clue of what they were. I gave her $50 for them. And this was back in a time where, once a week I would go to the library and research a bunch of the weird things I bought that week. And it turned out they were photogravures by Edward Curtis. In the world of photography, there's Ansel Adams. Then there's number two is Edward Curtis. The negatives for all these photos were in the Smithsonian. And I got in the neighborhood of right around over $20,000 for the photographs.
Wow. And the worst deal?
The worst deal. There's been plenty of those where this was just like 2 years ago. I bought an autographed book from Shoeless Joe Jackson that turned out to be completely fake and cost me like $14,000. There's been a lot of those over the years. It's to live and learn.
I remember that one. Looking at the show itself, how much of it do you have a balance between doing the little personality stuff with the old man and Chumley and your son and the actual assessment of the items there? How do you regulate that balance? And some shows, is it a little bit more personality, others a little bit more of the items that are brought in?
We just sort of play around with it, It's not your normal television set. We are laughing and giggling the entire time and playing jokes on each other. It's been the, is what I've said from the get-go. As long as it's fun, I'm going to keep on doing it, and it's still fun. So, like, we play around with the family stories a little bit. You know, I prefer to do more of, like, the history stuff. I really like to give the history lessons. That's the, you know, that's sort of my calling, I guess.
And it is on the History Channel, after all. Before we ask you about the triglyceride situation here, one of the things that you've said that's really hit home with me is when you buy something that says it's collectible, it's usually not going to be worth anything because they make so many of them, like autographed baseball bats commemorating a certain feat, and there are thousands of them out there. And as a result, as the years go on, they're really not worth that much.
Well, you see, because the things that are worth so much money are the things you never thought would be worth money. You know, in general. I mean, like, who would ever think a Zippo lighters could go for tens of thousands of dollars? Or we are kids, baseball cards. You know, we would, you know, take a clothespin and put them on the back of our bicycle so it would make the sound. Those are the things that end up being worth a lot of money down the road. There, I mean, there's a few collectible things that they make today that will be worth a lot of money down the road, like, you know, like proof gold coins and things like that. But always be leery of anything that in the packaging says collectible, because it probably never will be.
And you had like a Matchbox VW bus from the 60s that turned out to be worth thousands of dollars when it went for, what, 50 cents originally, right?
Oh, well, that particular Volkswagen bus never actually hit the market. That's why
it was a prototype, right?
That was the most expensive Hot Wheels ever made. It was worth right around $100,000.
Wow. Wow. Okay, triglycerides. Now, obviously, you know, you mentioned in the beginning, you know, these fat guys in the store, but you have emphasized, you know, Chumley went on this macrobiotic diet or something for a while. Your son lost a lot of weight. You diet, exercise. Tell us a little bit about your high triglycerides and what you're doing about it.
Well, you know, I went to the doctor a couple of years ago, and it was, you know, it was a standard doctor visit. You know, you go in there, I talk to her for a little bit, and she, at the end of the visit, you know, here, pee in this bottle and I need to take some blood. And then you sit around for a few weeks with your fingers crossed. And she calls me up, says everything's great, but. And you never want to hear a doctor say but. And she said I had very high triglycerides. This needs to be taken care of. And she gave me a prescription for a drug called Vascepa. And me being my generally cheap self, and you can see me on the show, so I'll just go to the health food store and get some fish oil or something like that. It'll be fine. And as it turns out, after doing a little research, I realized that these fish oil products that you buy from a health food store, most of the time they will raise your bad cholesterol. They'll lower your triglycerides some, a small amount, but they will raise your bad cholesterol. I mean, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's not a smart option. And so I started taking the Vascepa. It did lower my triglycerides. They're a great company. And I only work with people who work with people. That's the best way to put it, I guess. Because if you go to their website, it's called lowermytrigs.com. If you are a qualifying patient, you can get a copay card for as low as $9 a month, and that's real important to me because a lot of people out there, you know, they go to the doctor, they get a prescription, but that's all fine and dandy. If they can't afford the medicine, the prescription is going to do them no good. And at $9 a month, just about anybody can afford this if they need this drug.
And you're one of the busiest men in the world with your TV shows and everything else you're doing. How do you find time to exercise? Because if you can, anybody can.
I literally get up. I get to work right at 6 o'clock in the morning. I box 7 or 8 rounds with my sparring partner. And then I do the weight training for a little bit. And then by 8 o'clock, I am filming and running all my different businesses. And I usually get off around 6 or 7 that night.
Okay, and the diet part of it, obviously, it's real easy to fall into that junk food syndrome, isn't it?
You know what? I just started going old school when I pack a lunch. I got a lunchbox.
Is your lunchbox valuable?
Well, actually, I do. It was a funny joke. I actually have a He-Man lunchbox that I actually take them to work every once in a while.
That's Rick Harrison in conversation with Richard Neer. And if you'd like more information about how to reduce high triglycerides, go to lowermytrigs.com. That's lowermytrigs.com. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Richard Neer returns for the final segment and some interesting conversation about the old days of radio. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
For Touch of Gray in Washington, D.C., I'm Suzanne Hannis. 1 in 3 American senior citizens injures themselves in a fall every year. That means that nearly all of the country's senior population is at risk of a life-changing injury that may result in a loss of independence and a long period of rehabilitation or even death. The most common injuries related to falls are head trauma and hip fractures, according to the Centers for Disease Control. So how can you prevent such an event? Have a home safety evaluation from a licensed physical therapist, routine visits to your medical doctor, exercise 3 times a week for strength and balance training, semi-annual eye exams, and a monthly review of your medications by a doctor or pharmacist. Every time you walk out the door or even get out of bed in the morning, you run the risk of injuring yourself by a fall. Taking these preventative measures, you do minimize these chances. I'm Suzanne Hannis. Find out more at PremierGeriatricRN.com.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DinoVite.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Family will be on Dynavite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of our program, and we continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, excellent interview with Rick Harrison. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing it, and I could tell you enjoyed conducting it. And, you know, it's interesting. We only have a few minutes left in the program. You and I have known each other for 48 years. We have been friends since our first month as radio broadcasters. It's hard to believe we have both been in this business for 48 years, and look at how youthful we still are. And that being said, we do have a tremendous amount of history. We also, this program is being heard in New York City on WABC and in Los Angeles on KRLA. You and I have a tremendous history together going back to the early days of New York FM rock radio at the legendary WNEW-FM. In L.A., I was involved with KMET a couple of years later for over a decade. And I just want to mention to everybody that you and I conducted a conversation the other day that's going to appear in a podcast that I think the media freaks in the audience will enjoy. And without me dominating the next minute or two, why don't you share what we talk about?
Well, some of our early days in radio and how we got started and how different it is from the way things are done today. In our conversation, we talked about having to actually have a license to be on the radio. You had to have a third-class radio telephone operator's license, which was like a driver's test that you had to take. Whereas now, people are on the radio and doing podcasts and doing everything worldwide without any kind of, stamp of authority or any kind of actual credential or diploma proving that they are qualified to do this.
Even on licensed AM and FM radio, the funny thing was shortly after you and I got our license, which included the dreaded Element 9, which was actually mathematics, you and I both passed it quickly. Most of our colleagues from that era did. Over the next 10 years, the FCC was finding that young people couldn't pass that part of the test, that the educational system in America had so deteriorated that the average person could not pass a test that people of our generation were able to knock right off reading it one time through in a pamphlet. Just an interesting insight. I want to mention to everybody listening, if you're interested in hearing about a 45-minute conversation between Richard Neer and me, Michael Harrison, about our early days on Long Island and a lot of interesting history about radio between 1967 and 1970, check out my podcast at Podcast One. Here's the website. It goes on the air after this Memorial Day. It goes online, rather, after this Memorial Day weekend on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. Go to www.upcloseandfarout.com. I'm going to repeat it. Upcloseandfarout.com. And I think those of you who have a nostalgia for old radio will get a kick out of what we are doing. And I know, Richard, you have done so many things over the years, but let's face it, wherever you go, people still say, hey, I remember growing up with you on WNEW-FM. Do you still get that?
Oh, all the time, and from different people. And the amazing thing is that back in the day, you know, we look at ratings today, and everything is the horse race, who's doing well. You know, the ratings of that radio station weren't great. Because, as you've pointed out in Talkers Magazine, it's all estimates, and the people who were listening weren't available. They were living in college dorms. Mm-hmm. They were living at home with their parents. So they weren't available to hear, to respond to surveys as to, are you listening and what are you listening to? But the reach of that station was so great compared to the actual numbers that they were trying to sell as ratings to advertisers.
All right. Well, it's upcloseandfarout.com this Tuesday for the week that follows. Upcloseandfarout.com. Thank you, Richard Neer. Thank you, Carol Marks. Thank you, Beverly Santinello. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Next week, join us again right here for another episode of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.